Hey, it's Melissa from Melissa in the Morning on WICC 600, and thanks for checking out the podcast right here. If you want, you can always subscribe, share, and like it. Hope to see you guys soon. Thanks.
Fighting against injustice across Connecticut, Melissa in the Morning checks in with the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities on WICC 600.
Wow, George Welch, I don't think we could have picked a better day for you to come on than this morning. Good morning. Thank you for being here. How are you doing?
Good morning, Melissa. I'm okay. Obviously, what we're all going through right now, I'm sure is what you're referencing. But yeah, I'm all right.
Yeah, it's a horrific day. It's an awful day. I always say to people, these are the days that I hate my job. I completely hate it, and I just can't wait to clock out and go home and cry about it. It's true.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. You're inundated with it, and we're all talking about it. Obviously, the Texas shooting at an elementary school yesterday morning at 11:30, a gunman went in. 19 students were killed between the ages of like 9 and 10. You had two educators who were killed. The gunman was shot and killed by police who were there. But it's a horrific situation. And of course, it hits very close to home here in Connecticut because it will be 10 years this December that we had something eerily similar happen with Sandy Hook. So originally we had George coming on earlier this week to talk about Mental Health Awareness Month. And I do think we should still talk about mental health, obviously. But it is a little ironic that we changed it to this day. Like I said, couldn't be a better morning to have you on. So why don't we, just start with, what did you want to touch on with mental health, and does it connect to recent events here in America, whether it's Texas or even Buffalo? I mean, the fact that that was just last week.
I mean, what do we say at this point, Melissa? I mean, sure. I mean, mental health obviously is a big part of it. I really respected the speech that Senator Murphy gave yesterday, where, he touched on mental health, and he was real about it. And, he said that, a lot of places in the world have mental health issues and they don't have these problems because they don't have the same access to guns. And, I think mental health is obviously part of the picture. And, yeah, that's what I want to talk about today. I mean, that's part of here, and there's so many important issues with that. But there's so much more we have to do if we really want to make something different. I mean, when we did nothing 10 years ago after Sandy Hook, that was a statement from our country about how we prioritize things. I don't think we've gotten anywhere close to where we should be 10 years after that, especially in light of what happened in Texas just a few days ago.
Yeah. I think you're right on the money in that's, like what Senator Murphy was talking about. I think it's a piece. I think there's a lot more that we should have been tackling years ago, and we still are this morning. So as far as mental health is concerned, where do you think we're missing the boat?
Sure. I mean, I think the reason I'm here now is May is Mental Health Awareness Month, and it's something that CHRO has been really trying to bring attention to and awareness to. The human. The CHRO believes that access to healthcare, and that includes mental health services, is a human right. And the fact that access to both healthcare, and then even if you have healthcare, access to mental health service through so many healthcare providers is limited. Those are human rights issues, and that's something that the CHRO, continues to fight towards, is making sure that everyone, regardless of their employment or income, has access to health care and mental health services. And one of the points of Mental Health Awareness Month is for people who, don't have access to health care to look at some of the options they may have towards getting it. And for people who do have health insurance, reach out to your primary provider if you're feeling symptoms of anxiety or depression or any mental health issue, and see what, mental health options your insurance does provide. A lot of people don't realize that, insurance is getting better with it, and a lot of people do have access to benefits that they don't realize. So finding that out and making sure you take advantage of those things is important. This year's focus is getting back to basics, and what a what a thing to say right now on today of all days, get back to basics. Mm. I mean, you know, there's so many things going on in our country now, you know, back from people who are feeling isolation and depression and exhaustion and instability from COVID and, you know, from, you know, these mass killings that seem to be happening weekly. I mean, these things are all affecting all of us, and making sure that you're taking care of your mental health, mm-hmm. and, you know, removing the stigma from getting treatment,
yeah.
you know, admitting that you need help and going about it and making it public. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I've been a public interest lawyer now for, you know, 15, 16 years. And, you know, I see a therapist, and, you know, you deal with these things that, you know, you need to talk to someone about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the more everyone realizes that, you know, that's at least a step forward for us.
George, so I want to ask you a couple of things. So,
sure.
Because I think you touched on a lot of great, great things. First of all, I do agree that there are a lot of, look, we've seen a huge surge in mental health illness or issues because of the pandemic. But would you agree that sometimes there are people who have mental health that has stemmed on for longer than the pandemic, and either the pandemic exacerbated it or really had nothing to do with it? This is just something that stems from years ago. You know, like, we've had some people call in and say, what about video game usage? What about people who obsess with things online and they post about it constantly? You know, things that the pandemic had nothing to do with. It could have made it worse. But
sure.
Do you feel that we're relying a lot on, well, this is post-pandemic, and we're missing a huge chunk of people who already have red flags, but we just they're not being recognized, essentially?
I mean, sure. I mean, Mental Health Awareness Month, just to give a little context, I mean, it goes back to 1949. Like, this isn't a new problem.
Concept.
That,
right.
You know,
that's what
that
I'm
we're
getting at.
About. I mean,
yep.
Sure. I mean, it certainly is something that you know, has worked its way into the zeitgeist, I think, more than it has in the past. But it's certainly a longer lasting issue than the pandemic. I mean, mm-hmm. I think the pandemic has highlighted it. And, you know, I mean, there's real data that shows that the pandemic has, especially in young people, you know, the CDC did a survey last month, and it showed that over, you know, a little bit over 60% of people between the ages of 18 and 24 are showing some signs of mental illness right now.
Mm-hmm.
I think both things are true. I mean, I think the pandemic has exacerbated it, especially in young people who,
yeah.
you know, need that stability in their life, and they're not getting it right now. And at the same time, I think you're right. I mean, so many of our services, you know, we've made choices about our priorities in our country. We've made choices. I mean, these things don't just happen by accident.
Right.
We've gotten to where we are on purpose, mm-hmm. by making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
We haven't provided the resources that we need to our communities to address issues of mental health, to address issues of basic human health, to get treatment for diabetes, to get treatment for dialysis. I mean, basic health care. Basic mental health care.
We're still terrible at that as a country.
Right.
Yes,
and, I mean,
you're right. You're
this
right.
This is an entwined conversation. So, mm-hmm. I mean, yes, I think it's gone on for a long time. And again, it hasn't happened by accident. We've made choices. We've made our priorities. Mm-hmm. And we are, you know, we're
seeing
with
the aftermath. Right.
Things.
We're seeing the
right.
aftermath of it. We're chatting this morning with George Welch of the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities. And of course, we're talking about Mental Health Awareness Month. And what a time to talk about it, as we are still reeling from what happened in Texas, even Buffalo last week. Even almost 10 years later, we're still recovering from Sandy Hook. I mean, it's not like these ever get any easier. Here was my other question for you, George.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about mental health resources, right? You know, you were saying we don't have enough resources. We're not making it available. We're not making it affordable. I agree.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious, this is, I guess, a two-part question. So, you know, we hear a lot of times from our listeners about back in the 80s, you had Fairfield Hills in Newtown. And
sure.
and how that was shut down, obviously. And in many people's opinions, that was a horrible decision. Now, you know, I'm curious with where we're at now and how we run facilities and how they are looked at, in your professional opinion, if you think that we should be re-looking at the idea of having mental health facilities reopen. And the reason I ask that is because, one, would it make a difference? But two, because, you know, we talk an awful lot about parents being proactive in their kids' lives and finding help if they can. And I've got to be honest with you, George, I've got a young son. And if my son came to me tomorrow and said, hey, I'm struggling with my mental health, or I think I'm going to hurt myself, or God forbid he says I want to hurt somebody else, I got to be honest with you, other than finding maybe a therapist or something, I'd feel more comfortable, instead of an hour a week or an hour every couple of days seeing someone, I'd feel more comfortable checking him in somewhere. I'm being honest. And I don't even know where I would call to do that. I honestly don't know where I would call. I don't know where I would go, because that's really not common knowledge, and I don't even know if there are resources to do something like that. So with all that, what would you say?
I mean, I think the reason that these, you know, sort of security-based healthcare, you know, mental health care-based facilities shut down were – yeah, I mean, there was large-scale abuses, and there was also kind of thoughts as, you know, changing in thoughts as to, you know, what is effective treatment. I mean, we obviously need to make sure that we're safe. I mean, that has to be a fundamental thing. If you're
absolutely
not safe, you
yes
can't move on. You know, I mean, people should be safe when they go to school. Kids should be safe when they go to school, without question. So, I mean, figuring out how to make that work, I think, is an extraordinarily complex question. And, you know, I mean, I come to it from, you know, the standpoint of being a lawyer. I mean, I'm not a mental health expert. I mean, I don't know the ins and outs of what would be the best way to do it. But I do know that, you know, in general, you know, we've talked about it before, Melissa, a lot of my background deals with police and incarceration issues. I was a public defender for over a decade. And incarcerating people and putting them in secure environments where they can't leave has generally not been an effective way for us to deal with
society. Why does it have to be like that, George? Why can't it be the way we treat assisted living or nursing homes? Like, why, if you have a mental health, if you're coming forward and saying, I'm struggling, why can't it be treated like a nursing home would, where you're not strapped down to a bed, you're not like under 24/7 suicide watch, you're someone who's like, hey, you know what, I'm struggling, like as if you were an alcoholic, and I'm struggling, I want to go to a facility. Why can't it be looked at that way? I guess I agree with you. Past mental health facilities were horribly run, awful. And absolutely, I'm with you that there were a lot of abuses that went on and questionable things and treatments. And I agree with you. But if it was handled properly and it was looked at more as like almost like a nursing home facility, somewhere where you are monitored, where you have people on staff who are there, who could help you, they check in with you every single day. You're in a monitored facility. You know, like, why doesn't that exist? It just sounds extreme, you know?
Sure. No, I don't think it does sound particularly extreme. It sounds like a hospital to deal with people's mental health issues, and, you know, the same way we deal with, you know, any issue that comes up with your body. I mean, mental health is physical health, and having facilities to deal with that, I think, makes a lot of sense. And I think they do exist. It's just a resource question. They exist for people who have the finances to attend.
Correct.
Them.
Who know about them.
Right.
Like, I couldn't name one for you. I know we have some here.
Nor could I.
I don't know where they are.
We're in a very wealthy state, and we have these resources, and if we were people who had those means, we would know what they are.
Right.
But again, we've made that decision of how to use our resources as a country and as a state. I mean, it comes back to, you know, is the solution to, you know, get more policing? I would say no. I would say use some of those funds, redistribute some of those funds to provide for more resources like the one that we're talking about now, facilities that honestly can address mental health issues in ways that aren't penal, in ways that aren't incarceratory, you know, in ways that are productive to the people who are there. And I think that would go a long way towards destigmatizing it as well. If people knew that they could get issues addressed in places that were safe.
I agree.
And healthy.
I agree.
And, you know, nurturing. Mm-hmm. They would address these. I believe they would that these issues would get addressed more. But it's, again, I mean, I think it really comes down to the choices we've made. You know, I think that's a really important. I mean, I've said it a lot in this conversation, but I think it's so important to realize that these things don't happen by accident. Mm-hmm. This isn't bad luck. These
right.
are choices,
these are
we've
choices
made,
we made,
and they're priorities we continue to keep.
George, unfortunately, we have run out of time. I could talk to you about this for hours, but I really appreciate you coming on. And if anybody wants to contact the Commission on Human Rights and Opportunities, what is your website?
Sure. You can see us at www.ct.gov/CHRO. You can also follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And just given the conversation we're having today, you know, if you're feeling any symptoms of extreme anxiety or depression or just need someone to talk to, you can call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline. The number there is 1-800-273-8255. Thank you for having me today, Melissa.
Thank you. George Welch here on WYZ.
Staying smart while having some fun in the sun. It's Melissa in the Morning Summer Safety Week, now on WICC 600 AM and 107.3 FM.
We are welcoming Dr. Nicole Carew here with New Vance Health, and we're talking about skin protection because far too often we just let the sun take over, and instead of getting sun-kissed, we get sunburned, and slowly but surely that could be a real problem and could cause skin cancer. So good morning, Dr. Carew. Thank you so much for being here. How are you?
Good morning. Thank you for having me to discuss this important topic. I'm good.
Absolutely. I mean, we are very excited for the upcoming unofficial start to summer, which is this weekend. But, you know, the sun is expected to come out. We're going to be in the 70s, even the 80s. We're getting into the 90s next week. So it's exciting. But we do know a lot of people will just aimlessly go out and sit under the sun. And tell us, just on average, when you go and you sit out for an hour or two, what does that do to your skin if you have no protection?
So if you're going out for an hour or two without any sun protection, you're very likely to get a sunburn. And so you may not immediately see that while you're out in the sun, but by the time that you get home later in the evening or even the next day, you may notice that your skin turns red, it may blister, and that raises your risk of developing skin cancer in the future.
This is probably a very odd question, but how many times, and you don't have to give me an exact number, but how many times can you get severely burned before skin cancer becomes a reality?
Actually, every person is different in terms of how many burns you're able to accumulate before getting skin cancer. So people who have fair skin, freckles, light eyes, light hair, they're more likely to develop skin cancer than people who have darker skin, darker hair, darker eyes. But it is a risk for everybody. So really, we don't want anybody to get any sunburns. Obviously, that's not possible. You may still, despite all protective measures, get a burn, but there are many things that you can do to prevent that. And so we recommend people just take all the precautions and prevent, you know, getting those burns, since we don't know how many for you as an individual will take to develop skin cancer.
So we're going to talk about some of those preventative measures we can take. I remember, though, Dr. Carew, when I was in high school, we had somebody with one of the local hospitals come in, and they had some kind of a machine, and it literally gives me nightmares because I remember this, and it changed my life. I wish I could remember what kind of a machine it was, but it allowed students to put their face inside of like a box, essentially, and it had UV lighting on the inside. Do you know what I'm referring to? Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
Is this one of the boxes where then it showed you how your
skin
actually
damage.
Looked?
Yep.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah, so, absolutely. So there's a lot of skin damage that you cannot see on the surface of your skin. But when you go into one of those boxes and you take a look, you look much more aged. You have many more, you know, dark spots on the skin, and all of those things over time may actually come out as you get older. But those may also manifest as skin cancers later on in life.
So it terrified me. It absolutely terrified me. I was a sophomore in high school. I'll never forget it. I stuck my face in that box, and I was unrecognizable. It was terrifying. And there were some areas that almost were were brighter than others, and I had asked the person who brought it in, what does that mean? And they said it kind of meant that those areas are more inclined to become skin cancer. And it was from that day forward, I have never in my life since then tried to get even an ounce of sun on my skin. I put on, all my makeup has SPF in it. I always have a hat or a visor on. I am terrified of skin cancer. And I'm curious, if you have that kind of damage at this point, is there a way to either reverse it or hold off from it becoming skin cancer?
So if you already have sun damage, there's no way to actually reverse it, but continuing to take good sun protective measures is the best way to prevent it from actually turning into a skin cancer. And also seeing a dermatologist is really important so that you can have all of your skin checked, all of your moles, because there are a lot of characteristics that we look for. We have something called the ABCDEs. And A stands for asymmetry, B for border irregularity, C for color, D for diameter, and E for evolution. So these are things that a dermatologist will look at, but also you know, since you see yourself more often than a dermatologist, can look at these various factors on your own skin. So just to elaborate a little bit more, the asymmetry, you want to look at your moles and see if one half looks different than the other half. For the B, border irregularity, if it's an irregular, not well-defined border, then it's more likely that it may be a cancer. Most non-cancers are smooth and have a well-defined border. Color refers to multiple colors. Most moles that are not cancerous should have a uniform color. D for diameter, we're really talking about over 6 millimeters. So if you remember those old wooden pencils that people use, I don't even think anyone uses anymore, that would be the standard diameter that we're talking about. Okay. And evolution is really changing. So any mole that you see that's changing, either in color or texture, or if it starts bleeding over time, those are very concerning features that may have turned into a skin cancer. And so you should see a dermatologist right away.
And get it removed, I would think.
Yeah, they will at least do a biopsy, or they would remove it, just depending on the various factors when they actually look at it.
Okay. Dr. Nicole Carew is here with New Vance Health, and we're talking about skin cancer and just taking care of yourself. So this summer, you know, as people are heading outdoors, they're going to be under the sun a lot. What do you suggest? What are the best things that people can do to better protect their skin?
So you really want to make sure that you're covered up, whether that for you means wearing sunscreen all over your body, if you're somebody who really likes to be out and feel warm, or you're sweating a lot and so you feel like you can't wear protective clothing. You want to wear sunscreen with an SPF of at least 30. It should be broad spectrum sunscreen, meaning that it protects against UVA and UVB rays, and you need to reapply it every 2 hours, especially if you're sweating or you're swimming. That's the only way that you're going to get the maximal protection from a sunscreen. Otherwise, wearing, you know, protective clothing, light colored, lightweight cotton, those are great because you don't have to worry about missing spots. The whole area is covered. They also now make those specific shirts and even, you know, pants and bathing suits with a long sleeve that have a built-in SPF. So those are great. You don't have to worry about anything about the reapplying or getting wet. And especially for kids, that's a great option because they're running around, they're going in the sand. They don't necessarily want to be slathered up in sunscreen every 2 hours. A hat will protect your head and your face from the sun. That will also provide you some shade and keep you cool. And you do want to remember to protect also your eyes and your lips. So wear sunglasses with UV protective lenses. If they have a number on them, you're looking for a number that says UV 400. Those are going to be the most protective. And then you want to wear a lip balm with SPF and reapply it throughout the day, because we often neglect our lips and forget that that's an area that's getting a lot of sun. And those are also prone to getting skin cancers.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And really quick, Dr. Carew, does it matter how high the SPF is? I know you said at least 30, but, you know, sometimes you'll see 50, 70, 100. I mean, does it make a difference after a while what number SPF it is?
So when you get to those higher numbers, it does make a difference, but the benefit is much less than once you hit that 30. Once you hit 30, you're protected from most of those rays. The difference between 30 and 100 is much different than the difference between like a 15 and a 30, because you really want to have just a good broad spectrum of coverage. And once you hit SPF 30, you're covering those rays. You're covering about, you know, 95% of the rays that are getting into the actual skin layers. So 100 is going to provide you a marginally more benefit, but not really to the same level of getting to that, you know, 95% that you're already hitting with the SPF 30. That's why 30 is really the number that we recommend. Anything above that is great, but you don't necessarily have to go crazy trying to get the highest number.
Okay. Yeah, that's what I was curious about. Dr. Nicole Carew, we really appreciate you coming on this morning. And of course, if you want to learn more, you can always go to newvancehealth.org. Thank you so much.
Of course. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, we appreciate you coming on for Summer Safety 2022 here on WICC.
Connecting commerce to your community. Bridgeport Regional Business Council President and CEO Dan Onofrio is on the Lisa in the Morning on WICC 600.
Good morning, Dan. So glad to have you back on the show. How are you?
I'm great, Melissa. How are you doing this morning?
I'm doing okay. Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it. I thought it was a very exciting announcement that was made by Mayor Joe Ganim earlier this week that parks are going to be opening this weekend, splash pads, all the excitement to kick off summer. I think it's good for Bridgeport, and I would imagine there's a trickle-down effect and that this would be great for businesses.
Yeah, for sure. You know, I think last weekend with the heat, everyone went from kind of a wet, cold spring to all of a sudden summer hits you in the face. And right around the corner here is Memorial Day weekend, which is, you know, the unofficial kickoff to summer. So I think it's great for not just our parks that the city has plenty of throughout the community, but it offers an opportunity for businesses too, because they can really utilize those outside dining areas that we've been, you know, the towns and municipalities in the region have been so graciously able to allow restaurants to continue to have through the pandemic and into this new season here. So, yeah, I think it's a good opportunity for people coming into town, obviously, with Seaside Park. And, you know, I've been biking a lot more, so I've been down there a little bit myself on my bike. And I noticed this particular week with the weather being so nice, you know, an influx of people coming in. So it's nice. Nice to see it. I think it'll be great for business.
Yeah, I think so, too. And, you know, something actually that I noticed last week, Dan, I was really excited about it because I personally know the owner at Zach's Frozen Yogurt in Stratford. I saw Michelizzi's is expanding and that they're partnering up with Zach's. Did you see that?
I did. Yeah, absolutely. So I'm very familiar with that particular industry. And Jay Piccirillo and Michelizzi's does a great job. They have a history here in Bridgeport. And I think, was it last season or the season before, they opened up in downtown
Milford. Yes. Oh, we love it there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I'm happy for him. I'm happy for, you know, seeing the Bridgeport-based business expand. And, you know, that's perfect for the season, right, with talking about summer and all that stuff. Zach's is a great product, too. Yeah, they're very involved with their Stratford Chamber of Commerce and the Stratford business community. So it's good to see, you know, businesses expanding and partnering up and collaborating with other businesses, too, to, you know, to continue to offer better products and better service to, you know, to folks that live and are visiting in and around the area.
Yeah, I think both entities are really profound in the surrounding area. And just to remind folks, even though it's called the Bridgeport Regional Business Council, Dan and the folks there at the council, they help a lot of surrounding towns. It's not just Bridgeport. And, you know, when you look at this merger between Michelizzi's and Zach's Frozen Yogurt, I'm wondering, Dan, is this a parallel that you bring or that you talk about with other surrounding businesses? Like, you know, we've seen with the pandemic, a lot of places have closed down. Are you guys talking a lot about either mergers or ways to kind of collaborate with other businesses that are in the same industry, ways to kind of build up these locally owned, especially shops or different places of business that are still kind of struggling? Like, is that something you guys are diving into?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, certainly, you know, the three chambers that we represent, as you pointed out, Bridgeport, Stratford, and Trumbull, so they operate kind of independently, but the chairs of each one of those boards, we come together pretty regularly, and they serve on the BRBC board. So a lot of the individual issues and items that are impacting businesses, we talk a lot about almost every month. We have debates and conversations about what can we do as a business community to support other businesses. And since I've been here, you know, the smaller businesses and mid-sized businesses, especially through the pandemic, you know, many of them had to reinvent themselves. And, you know, small examples where why the power of the BRBC and really working from a regional through a regional lens has an impact is, and I may have referenced this a while back, but, you know, for example, we had a business that was basically was going to shut down. They were purchased by a company out of West Hartford, and they were going to shut them down and relocate the whole business to West Hartford. And, we went in and had a conversation with them to understand their needs. And they said, well, you know, we just don't really need the space. The space is a little small. You know, if we were going to do something, we'd like something a little bit bigger. And Stratford at that time just didn't have anything to accommodate them. But we found some space in Trumbull, you know, because of our conversations working with the town of Trumbull. So we were able to relocate that business and keep them in the region and keep those 15 employees working here in our region. So they didn't have to either decide to commute up to West Hartford or find another job or whatever it is. So there's those kind of experiences where, you know, we try to help businesses as much as we can. You know, we may not always have all the answers, but certainly I can guarantee you one thing, the BRBC and our chambers, you know, if we don't have the answer, we will connect you with the resource that does. And that's why, you know, I believe strongly in business organizations like ours. You know, I referenced, I think, earlier to the listening tours we're doing with the downtown business community. You know, mm-hmm. as we're coming out of this pandemic, you know, we've partnered up with Downtown Special Services District just to understand, you know, the needs and concerns of downtown businesses. You know, as the amphitheater ramps up for the summer, you know, that we know there's going to be an influx of people coming through town. So what can we do for those businesses to further support them? Mm-hmm. You know, and we're learning a lot from them. And now it's up to us to take action on the 1, 2, 3 things that are really resonate and that are consistent among all different segments.
I'm curious, is Mike, who's the owner of BlackRock Social, is he in any of those groups? I'm just curious, or any of those conversations?
He is. Mark's a great guy. You know, he's got a lot of energy. You know, he's got a great product over there in service at BlackRock Social House. You know, everything is like glucose free over there. You know,
it's delicious. We love it. And all of his workers are phenomenal. They're all like, we can't think of a better boss. I mean, this man knows how to run a restaurant. This man knows how this industry works. I mean, he's a West Coast guy, came over here and really, I think, created an incredible product in BlackRock Social House. And the reason I bring him up in these conversations is because I'm constantly in contact with Mark, because I know he and many other restaurant owners, not just here, but across the state of Connecticut, continue to wonder, like, where's more relief? Why aren't we getting more federal relief? You know, we're passing all this money to go to Ukraine, which, you know, nobody's saying, oh, that's awful. You know, sure, it's great. But we're not passing, you know, federal relief to come to the businesses, you know, trickle down to the businesses here in Connecticut as well. And I just wasn't sure if Mark was in any of those conversations, because I know he's not the only one struggling.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. In fact, Mark and I in the Bridgeport Chamber, you know, surprisingly, Bridgeport does not have a restaurant week. You know, our surrounding communities do. And
what? Bridgeport doesn't have a restaurant week?
We do not have a formal restaurant week.
I didn't know that.
It's something that he's brought up multiple times. And I would love to partner with him and other restaurants and figure out what's the right model. We've talked a little bit about it. You know, it kind of came up last year when the city did the 200
anniversary.
Yeah, 200.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and we're like, why can't we take this momentum and continue, you know, and identify maybe once or twice a year, you know, a restaurant week, because we've got so many great restaurants here.
I'm surprised Bridgeport doesn't have one, Dan.
Yeah, I'm really
surprised by that. Huh.
Exactly. So it's something that Mark has been on me and the Bridgeport Chamber to say, hey, what can we do to get this kickstarted? And we do need a partnership with the city on this. So it's something that I'm going to revisit. Hopefully, you know, and they take a little time to plan and execute correctly. So hopefully it's something we can focus on for 2023 for these restaurants, especially, you know, during that weird time when, you know, we're coming out of winter into spring where, you know, people just aren't quite ready to, exactly. And I think that's what we want to try to target. So hopefully 2023, we'll have our first ever formal Bridgeport Restaurant Week. You can hold me to it. Hopefully we can get that going. I'm sure Mark will anyway.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure. Oh yeah. No, if Mark puts his mind to something, he gets it done, I will say. And you guys are an incredible support to Mark and many other restaurant and businesses owners in Bridgeport and the surrounding area. And Dan, if we do have a restaurant week, we better learn about it first here on WICC. I'm calling dibs
for sure.
Right now. right now. 100%.
100%.
All right. Sounds good. Well, Dan, thank you for coming back on this morning. We missed you, and we'll talk again next week.
Sounds great, Melissa. Talk to you soon. Enjoy the holiday weekend, too.
Thank you. You and your family as well.
It's time to get up and get moving. Workout Wednesday. Melissa in the morning on WICC 600.
So we know during the pandemic, the gyms all closed down for the most part, and virtual workouts really became the popular thing to do. But will the trend stick around? Amy Linus is here this morning. She's our workout guru. She's our health consultant here on WICC. Good morning, Amy. Thanks for being here. How are you?
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me. I'm doing well. I hope you are, too.
Yeah, doing okay this morning. Thank you so much. So I was reading this in NPR the other day. Will the trends stick around? What do you think?
I honestly think for some it will. I mean, it kind of just goes by personality, if you want to, you know, think about it that way. I think, you know, having everything online and available to those who were a little intimidated of the gym life and the gym environment actually opened the door to fitness for a lot of people. So I kind of feel like it might be a little 50-50 split, because you do have those extroverts who like to be out and about. And then you have your homebodies and introverts who prefer to work out behind closed doors where nobody's watching. So I think it could go either way, to be honest with you.
What do you think about virtual workouts? Like, did you try any during the pandemic?
Oh, I did a lot of them myself, actually. I held a lot of those. I prefer them. I like them a lot. And I think that you reach a wider audience that way, too. Like I was saying, you know, you have your extroverts who like to be out and about, and then you have your introverts who will make every excuse under the sun not to go to the gym just because they don't like to be around a lot of people. So I think it's been a really, really amazing benefit for those who were a little gym intimidated, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, yeah. I'm curious what you felt was the big difference, you know, when you talk about, because we talk about that even like with schooling. Did you find that there's a parallel mm-hmm. where you're trying to train or help people, but maybe you can't, you know, have physical touch, or you can't be able to like look at people right there? Or did you find that, you know, if you had clients virtually, that you could still do what, you know, what effectively would change their lives through working out and through health? Did you find that virtual didn't really stop that?
Oh, there was a bit of a learning curve there, without a doubt. I do prefer to see someone in person and be able to reach out and touch them and that kind of a thing, by all means. There was a bit of a learning curve there, like I said, and you know, it was easy to overcome. It actually forced me to become a better instructor, to be quite honest with you, because rather than saying, hey, look at me do this, you're really having to use your words to describe the form and the way that you're lifting and all those different things. So I think it was more beneficial that way, as far as instruction goes, to be quite honest with you, because the, you know, the participant or the client per se is getting a lot more out of it that way, because you're having to really go into great detail explaining how to do things.
It's funny you say that. We're talking to Amy Linus this morning for Workout Wednesday. And the reason I say it's funny is because during the pandemic, one of my very good friends from college, she's a trainer, and she started this personal training virtually for people across the country, kind of a program during the pandemic. And I thought, you know what, I'll bite. Why not? I'll do it. I'll support mm-hmm. you. So I became one of her first 10 clients. And what I learned, what I thought was interesting as the person who was being trained, not the trainer, was that very quickly, because you have to film yourself and you have to like send those videos over, and you know, it's a lot more work on the trainer to look at those, to you know, to edit them, to point things out to you. I learned more about my body, which I thought was interesting. I've been in gym since I was 13 years old. And if a mm-hmm. trainer's like, flex here, you know, do this, bring your shoulders down or whatever, I would follow direction. But because I had to virtually send things, look at the videos, watch things back, critique things, hear her, and again, it's more work on the trainer. But I have to say, I learned more about my body and movements and what targets what part of my body's through virtual learning, which I was pleasantly surprised about.
Yeah, I mean, I have to agree with you on that, too. You're right. You actually learn your own body a little bit more and a little bit deeper because you're having to pay extra close attention to yourself. And then sending videos back and forth like that, you want to be spot on. You don't want to be, you know, you don't want the trainer coming back and giving you, you know, negative criticism. So obviously you're going to be on top of your game that way, too. So, you know, I think it was, like you said, it was a lot more work for the trainer, without a doubt. However, I think it was also a key learning curve for everyone. I think it was great. It kind of shook up the fitness world a bit, and I don't think there's anything wrong with that. Sometimes we do things one way all the time because they work, and that's great, but sometimes it's nice to veer off track a little bit and try something new and different.
I agree. And I know that you still will post videos on your website, on your social media accounts to just help with many people who follow you. What is your website, Amy, if people want to connect with you, if they want to see your workouts, if they want to learn more?
Absolutely. It's fitbodyvibe.com. And then keep in mind, too, we're also on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. So come check us out at all our multifacets online.
Okay, again, it's fitbodyvibe.com. And Amy Linus, we always appreciate that we get to have you on each and every week. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to next week with you. Enjoy your day, Melissa.
Thank you. You too. And happy Memorial Day weekend to you and your family.